Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Vassos Alexander.
He's the award-winning actor you adored as the Doctor and marvelled at his Malcolm Tucker. Now prepare to distrust him in a new thriller series, Criminal Record, on Apple TV Plus, which proves once again that you're never gonna beat a Peter Capaldi.
All right, Peter.
Nice to see you. And it's Capaldi.
Capaldi. Can you just to your left
all
and
right.
Get a bit more behind the mic?
Is that better?
Great. Thank you
Sorry,
so much.
Sorry, I'm an amateur.
No, you're not. Just lean in a little bit if you don't mind.
Okay, hello.
So Criminal Record, I watched 2 episodes last night. Right.
Well, thank you very much.
No, you weren't. Thank you. By the way, what kind of job is it when you have to watch great telly with great people in it, scaring the bejesus out of you on a Thursday night? So there's one rebellious but brilliant young cop in it. There's a rather clever, really super intelligent, bad older cop in it. And there's another cop sort of in between the two. Is that about right?
That's about it. Am I on the money there? That's how it works. Yeah.
Okay, do you want to frame it in a bit more detail?
Well, what happens is an emergency call comes in with a piece of information that suggests that somebody might have been put away for something they may or may not have done, but they confessed it's a murder. And this kind of fires up this young cop, played by the fantastic Kush Jumbo, who tracks down the officer who made the original conviction, who is me, a grizzled older cop on the edge of retirement. And it's a really bad idea for her to come around and start digging into my past, because I don't like it.
You don't like it at all. And the first few scenes is your character fulfilling the role of a chauffeur.
Yeah. Well, that was a strange thing that may have happened to you. Where that came from was I was being driven to the BAFTAs one night in a very glamorous fashion. And I fell into conversation, as I often do, with the driver.
Yeah.
And the driver eventually revealed to me, because I could tell he was clearly not full-time driver, he was a detective.
Currently?
Yeah, that's what he... Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't want to get anyone into trouble.
Yeah.
But and I discovered with other award ceremonies that I went to, that it's quite common for your driver to be a detective, not just like a copper on the beat, but a detective, because they're also acting as security.
Yeah,
and of course. They like to tell you stories because you impress them with your little showbiz stories. Well, then they start to impress you with their horror stories about what happened on this street or what happened. But he sort of told us a story that connected to a real, genuine case and told us some facts about that. And I thought, God, that's a brilliant start for a show.
Right.
It's having
so
the,
it's your idea, that bit?
No, it was an experience I had. It wasn't my idea. It was a factual thing that we just stuck in at the start because it was good.
Because it starts off and straight away, I suppose, I don't know, you know, because you do this stuff. As a viewer, I mean, oh, they've got me guessing straight away. I suppose that is the whole thing of these... It's not necessarily a murder mystery. It's a mystery, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a cop mystery. Straight away, I'm thinking, why is he really a cop, right? If he is a cop, is he an ex-cop? Why is he driving? Is he undercover? Am I supposed to think all those things?
Yeah.
Because I did.
Yeah.
I was in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, things will be made clear. I mean, one of the great things about crime drama is that, you can delve into the psyche and into darker parts of the psyche, but actually it's still got to be a show. It's still got to have a SWAT team
in it,
it
has, yeah.
And a helicopter, yeah. And guns and all of that kind of stuff.
Fight scenes.
All of that stuff. One of my most fun bits of acting in it was when I got to cross the... You know, the police have the ribbon that says, do not cross?
Yeah, yeah.
So I walked on and lifted that.
Of course you did, yeah.
That's so cool. With a cup of coffee.
So you're how do we get this across? Because, again, it's all about spoilers, isn't it? This is an Apple TV Plus show. You've been all around the world promoting this show. Are we towards the end of your promo tour? Where do we sit in it?
We just came back from New York last night. We did it because the world has changed so much. I mean, in the old days, you know, I'm an actor of a certain vintage. So in the old days, you'd do a show for the BBC.
Yes.
And if you were lucky, it might get sold to Australia.
Yes.
Or maybe Hong Kong, uh-huh. Or whatever. And that would happen over a period of 6 months, maybe a year, whatever. And you get a check for £2.20 in 2 years' time for a repeat. Nowadays, you do a show for Apple, they press a button and it's on in 130 countries.
Yeah,
in one go, which happened yesterday.
Right.
So suddenly, bang, it's out there. So we were in New York all this week, kind of sort of selling it there and do lots of international stuff. And so I'm being very glamorous and kind of jet lagged this morning. But this isn't what my life is normally like. It isn't.
Is it getting more like that or less like that?
I can't really tell because I'm in a sort of giddy, dizzy stage.
Right.
Where I really just want to go to bed. It's lovely to see you.
I'm sorry. No, I know. I got that. I thought that. And I thought, because I don't really mind whether people come on the show or not. And people say to me, oh, they can't make it or they can make it or they don't want to do your show. I go, fine, I don't mind. I don't want them to come if they don't want to come. So honestly, Pete, I love you to death, but you can go to home now if you want
to. No, I will after this. But no, you're lovely. It's lovely to be on the show. You're one of the people you go, actually, I would love to do that show because you have such a friendly atmosphere and it's so warm and it's such a great show.
Okay, let's try and keep that theme going then, shall we? My next question, mine threatens that, to be honest. Because you are so scary in it. You know, your face is an extremely scary face. It's also very kind, your face as well. You have... Do you find that... people laughing? No, it's true, though. You scared... We all said it this morning. Said, he's so scary, right?
So scary, wow. I don't know where that comes from.
Do you ever scare... You look in the mirror
sometimes. Do I ever scare myself?
Yes. That's my question.
No, I scare myself professionally sometimes. Sometimes I see myself acting and go, how does that guy get a job? How is he still working? But something seemed to happen to me. I mean, I used to be, when I started out when I was younger, I was a kind of amiable, kind of gentle comedy guy, a kind of, you know, a geeky kind of youngster and whatever. And then something happened. I remember I was doing a voiceover. I don't know if I'm allowed to say, can I mention a product?
Anything you like.
I used to do voiceovers for Anchor Butter, which were quite friendly.
Would you like
cheerful.
To recreate that moment?
I can't
magic,
remember what
yeah.
it was I said, but I remember I went into a session, which turned out to be my last session, because I delivered the line, whatever it was, Anchor Butter, feels like home, or whatever it is. And the guy said to me, could you be a little less sinister? And I thought, oh, my voice, I've moved into a sinister
This is me
zone.
On a good day.
I know, I'm being cheerful. I don't know. I think it's just you get a kind of... You get older and more things happen in your life and you get exposed to bad things as well as good things. And sometimes that colours your face. But it's all acting. I mean, it's all pretend.
No, basically. I know. But you do have the sort of... You have the raw materials more than most, don't you?
I don't know, Chris,
oh, my God. Honestly, Peter, I'm not joking. Mm. I am not joking. Because your character... What's his name again, DSI?
Hegarty,
yeah.
So scary name.
Scary, Hegarty. Scary names. But he's sort of a bit likable, which I suppose is the deal, isn't it? You know, you think, hang on, am I misunderstanding him? Is he misunderstood? Has he done anything wrong?
I think that's one of the things about, you know, crime shows, which we were saying about SWAT teams and helicopters and guns and all that stuff. You have to sort of keep the audience guessing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to throw a veil, really, over what you want to... You know, a lot of those other parts I played, like Doctor Who or Malcolm Tucker stuff, they're really out there. You know, they really tell the audience what the audience needs to know.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy's hidden, you know, and that's it's part of his mechanical role in the telling of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Is to be somebody who you call.
It's the mystery of the characters as well as the mystery of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And great thing about, I suppose this is why when you can watch some really good stuff, you can watch it 2, 3, 4, you can watch 100 times really good stuff, because you can pick which part of the puzzle you're going to play with next on the rewatch.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
so do you pick apart the characters, a character, the story, the whole time in question?
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, London is such a fabulous location for shooting crime things. I mean, it's this great sort of bubbling cauldron. Now you've got to just look out the window here and look at what a fabulous view we have here, you know, of the city and what's going on down
there.
What's
going on?
You know,
that's
there
the
are
thing.
A thousand stories in the naked city.
Yeah.
This is one
well,
of
from
them.
This time, because we're on the 17th floor, it looks like London's closed because it was just so far away from it. It's like when you're on the Pacific Coast Highway and driving up north from LA to San Francisco. The waves are 30 feet high, but you're so high up, they look like little ripples and you can't hear them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I used to love all those London movies like The Long Good Friday, you know, and Mona Lisa, which is a fabulous London crime movie with Kathy Tyson in it, who is in our show. I was so thrilled when she agreed to be in our show because, you know, Mona Lisa had been one of the inspirations for it.
Well, we haven't so far said anything about the plot or the story.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you're sort of match fit with this. How much do you want to say and how much do you not want to say? Criminal Record, episode 1 and 2 out now. New episodes released every Wednesday on Apple TV Plus.
It's a cat and mouse game between a grizzled older cop and a young, fresh-faced rookie who seeks justice in a darkening world.
So he may well have bent the rules for the wrong reasons in the past.
I don't know. I can't tell you any of that.
No. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't a question, right? But they do have something in common. They're both very, very intelligent.
Yeah.
There may be some kind of weird respect for each other as well. And also, they're both rebels and they're both mavericks and they both bend the rules for different reasons in their own way.
Yeah, they're not mavericks and they're not buddies. Mavericks, they always say maverick cops. They're not, you know, I don't like maverick cops.
Okay, sorry, I apologize. There's a cop show called Maverick, wasn't there?
Top Gun.
No, I know there's a character
Maverick
called
Maverick. Is that not a cowboy thing?
I don't know. Why do you dislike the term Maverick so much?
Because that's usually the description when someone says to you about a part, it's a great part, it's a Maverick cop.
Oh, I see.
And you go, oh, yeah, you mean you've just copied all these other cops.
Not for me.
It's just the guy that drinks too much or whatever.
God, I feel bad now. It was going well,
wasn't feel
it?
Bad.
Oh,
no, I feel bad. I feel bad. I shouldn't have done that. That's not me. You know that.
Did
that's
you work with your wife on this show?
My wife produced this show. She was the executive producer
of this
show.
How does that feel? Well, has it pan out? How does it happen?
How does it happen? Well, there is nothing. There's nothing. My wife has an idea, which is my wife's produced Vera and Shetland and shows like that. She was interested in why people make confessions and then retract them.
Right.
Which is historically very interesting. And she wanted to do a show that was based on that premise. So she contacted Paul Ruttman, who's a wonderful writer that she worked with on Vera, and they started talking about it and putting these ideas together. And as they put those ideas together, I could see there was a cop in there who looked quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I said, who are you thinking of? For the because I might
did
be quite
you actually do that? Did, no,
well,
come
it was
on.
Sort of more, yeah, you know, it was more.
Was it a tap on the shoulder?
That.
Were you looking at? Was she, did she have a script on the sofa? Or
they were talking about it, and I sort of said, you know, I think I might be quite good in that role.
This is interesting. Okay, yeah. I'm scared. I can't believe I'm venturing into. The, watch out for this question, Bassos. Do you think that they set a trap for you to fall in, asking for the part?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So she left, like, if you leave a book around that you want people to read, it was that kind of thing.
Yes. Well, of course, what I've just described, what happened is the showbiz version, as you know, for the radio, because we're on the radio and we have to deliver, we have to compact and alter the truth to make it more fun.
Okay.
The truth was more long drawn out and less humorous.
It's funny because the truth about radio communication, because there's a lot of that. There's a lot of it's dependent. The beginnings of the episode one is very dependent on certain transactions of emergency calls to 999 and what happens then. Now, there's two things you can do here. Well, there's three nowadays, which is what we're going to get to. So you can dramatise what happens in those particular exchanges. Okay, that's one way of doing it. Then you could try and be gritty and dramatise or under-dramatise those exchanges to say, well, this is how it really is, but then it wouldn't be exciting enough. But actually, it seems to me like people have gone and done the rest of thinking, no, how are they? Because that's dramatic enough in the moment. They seem, I mean, I don't know, but they seem extremely real to me, those, that how that might be, how that might play out.
You mean the emergency call scenario?
The emergency call scenario and what happens, the responsibility and the protocol of, and the practices of how those calls are received and then graded instantly in the moment from sentence to sentence.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, I mean, the show is, we hope, a responsible show.
Right.
And Paul Ruttman and Elaine are very, very responsible writers and producers. And they have people, obviously, who are advising about how that process works.
Yeah.
So everything like that is kind of based on truth. That has to be. That has to be the cornerstone of everything. Yeah. Otherwise, it all falls to pieces.
But also, when she asks for assistance at crime scene, and it's like, oh my, this sounds like this might be how it happens.
Yeah, it is. It is, because obviously there are police advisors that we have and all of that stuff.
And that's all changed, hasn't it, in the last few years? That's all gone to a different level, I think.
I don't really know, because I'm not a policeman.
No, but you're a viewer.
I'm a viewer.
It seems to be, those situations seem to be portrayed now grittier and differently to how they were in the past.
Why were they done in the past?
Just softer. Or not. They didn't seem to be as...
Well, I used to like when you had to dial.
That was quite suspense.
Hello? Scotland Yard.
I suppose it's about the long form, having the time and the space to get into the detail of those things.
Yeah, and also it's because, I mean, Paul is such a wonderful writer. He writes very cinematically. So what happens is he cuts through time.
Ooh.
You know, you may have. I mean, that whole thing that
cuts
we have
through time.
In the first episode about the emergency call, it happened the night before, but we're seeing her listening to it, but we're cutting back and forth to it. And that was all in the script. That's all beautifully delineated in the script and conceived beforehand. So, you know, I love the way that happens. But yes, all the technology helps tremendously.
As Doctor Who helps you turn left and left again, as you may not have planned, if there ever was a plan to, and if there ever is really a plan to anybody's career, as opposed to reverse, conveniently reverse engineering for the sake of a decent biog, for example. You know, has this helped you? Because have you ever inhabited a role like this before? I don't think you have.
No, this was totally new for me.
Okay, so. In what way? What flavours are new?
The flavour that was new was that he was hidden, that he had to be veiled,
right.
That he had to be, you couldn't, you know, we had to have the sense that he was, you know, one of those, he was, of all the characters in the show, he's actually the most film noirish.
Yes.
He's actually quite a classical character.
Nice.
You know, yes, it's very gritty, it's very modern, all that kind of stuff, blah, 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 but actually he belongs to an illustrious and dark past. I think he kind of belongs to London. He's that kind of sort of, although obviously he's Scottish and all that, he's just part of, you know, the great pile of people who have come here and become absorbed and loved London and been part of the layers of sediment that have built up. Where am I going with this?
You're so good. You're so
I don't know
good.
Where I'm going
I
with
love
this.
It when you jet lag. It's great.
Oh, God.
What a show this morning after Alan Cumming, now one of my all-time favourite actors. I love Peter Capaldi since The Crow Road, and I've longed for hair like his ever since, but I've never got it. Well, that's good, isn't it?
Well, that's good.
Fran says, I need to go to work, but I can't stop listening to this chat with Peter Capaldi. Too good. Happy weekend. That's probably till my last but one question. John from Leamington Spa. A few years ago, I was visiting the Doctor Who experience with my... Did you play Doctor Who? Is that right? Have you been Doctor Who?
I have,
no way.
Not in the doc. The real Doctor Who, not a guy at the Doctor Who experience.
Apparently, number 12 is what I'm hearing. You hate that, don't you? I don't number them. That's what they do in America. He was a huge Doctor Who fan. While we were there, Peter Capaldi and his wife quietly sat down in the cafe and signed autographs and did selfies with fans. He's such a lovely, friendly bloke. And we all have huge respect for him. My daughter declared it the best day ever.
Ah, that's very sweet of them to say.
It's cool, isn't it? Where are you in your Whovian past?
What do you mean, where am I in my
life? Because, you know, you play Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you couldn't be any hotter. The heat tends to resonate for quite a while.
Yeah.
The afterburn.
It's nice.
Out of 10, where are you still, do you think?
Probably, I would say, 7.
You're not allowed a 7.
Well, people are just... Well, I don't know. I mean, people... Sometimes you see people... lots of people come and talk to me about it, which is lovely. It's always a nice experience. And then I often see people who are a little bit scared to come and talk to me. Yeah. And, of course, you can't go... Particularly if they're young, you can't go and say, would you like a selfie with the doctor or anything like that? So it's a little... It's retreated a little, but it's nice. You feel a little bit like Santa Claus. Or Peter Pan or something like that.
Yeah,
I know, it's the same old material. Come on, give me a break.
I'm not having it. I want original answers to my unoriginal questions.
You're calling the wrong person for original stuff. No, I love it. And I'm really enjoying the show at the moment. I think it's great. I think Shuti's amazing. I think he's got such vigour and excitement and love about him. And such charisma.
As a past doctor, I don't think you're ever colder than an 8 as long as you're alive.
You think?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'll take that.
Do you go to the comic cons and all that stuff?
No, I haven't for a few years.
But what are they like? What is it like to? Is that like no other kind of sort of public appearance?
It's strange, just because it's just full of people who love you but don't know you,
right?
And I think it's I find it a little weird because I'm brought up that when people talk to me, I feel as if I should talk to them for. You know, make a conversation
properly,
with them. But there's a kind of minder saying, we've got to move on. We've got to move on. Because there's like, you know, like, beep, 1,000 people here or beep, something beep. Like that. So we've got to get, Kerching. I think the noise we need is kerching, kerching.
I'm not part of it. I've heard some extraordinary stories about those comic cons from a commercial point of view. Vassos.
We loved this. I watched this with my wife on Apple TV yesterday. We watched the first episode, and she immediately, from the first moment you were driving, she goes, I don't trust him in this. and then she heard me say on the air earlier that you're so I suppose a bit sinister in this, that when you say next time, do what your boss says and just send an email.
Yeah.
I thought, even when he says that, you know, Peter comes across as a bit scary. She goes, forget that. When he says, this calls for a cup of tea.
No, it's scary. True, by the way. It's true. It's the most eerie, this calls for a cup. What does that mean? What do you mean, cup of tea? What kind of cup of tea is it? Is it poisoned? Is it purple? Is it builders?
Well, could you get in touch with Anchor Butter and tell them that?
It seems like you were reveling in this.
I think I enjoyed playing it because it was hard. It was something that I'm not used to doing. Working with Kush was amazing because we sort of, without discussing it, decided not to rehearse. So although we knew all of our lines, we just sort of did it. So what you see in front of the cameras is sort of the first time us doing it with each other and seeing what the other one's going to do and stuff like that. And we kept that going all the way through. So that gave it a certain kind of tang, a certain kind of...
Is that unusual, not to rehearse?
It is unusual. I mean, I have to say I prefer not to rehearse because I'm not, you know, I always think if I find something when we're rehearsing, I'll never get it when we do it. So I'd rather just you know, work out where we're going to stand and stuff like that and then just start shooting.
Do the crew like that more? Because I would imagine it doesn't take as long.
Oh, no, it takes a long time because we keep going and going and going.
All right, I see.
I think it's just good to keep the energy there, you know, just to keep a thing alive. Rehearsing can sort of drain all the energy out of something.
Yeah, we're not fans of that.
No.
That's why we do radio. That's what we do. Keep going for 3.5 hours in radio. Seems longer, apparently, than listen safe sometimes, most days. Peter, thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
Criminal Record, episode 1 and 2, out now. 8 in all, I'm hearing.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. New episode's released every Wednesday. It's really scary. Of course, it's mysterious, you know, and it's a criminal drama, but it's also scary. It's almost like a horror film.
Oh, no, it's
no,
not.
It's scary.
It's not a horror.
You don't know how scary you are in this. Seriously, you have no idea. And you're getting scarier.
I'm not getting scarier. Look at me. Look at the state of me.
You could be I mean, you know, you could be anything you want, scary-wise. If That's anybody's so looking sweet, for a scary character...
A scary granddad.
In the world of... Well, anything you like. In the world of, you know, cinema, whether it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the next Bond film, whatever that's going to be. What's the greatest whisper going on in the movie industry at the moment? Positive. What's the greatest positive, interesting whisper going on in your world, in the acting, TV, mega series, cinematic production world that you shouldn't be telling us about?
That the Bond film will be a period film.
Shut up.
No, that's the only way they can do it.
No, an origin film. Yeah. An origin film.
Yeah. That's the whisper.
You're going to go backwards.
Yeah. Set it in the 60s.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a Bond film set in the 60s? I know there are some.
Yeah, I suppose so. But because the novels were 30s and 40s, weren't they?
Were they really? Did you see that great documentary about Noel Coward? Neighbours with Ian Fleming in Jamaica.
Yeah, GoldenEye.
And that Noel Coward had been a spy.
Yeah. Have you read Noel Coward's diaries?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God, they're so good.
Shake and not stirred.
They're so good. Because he was a painter, he was a big painter, wasn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
And you're a sketcher and a musician and an actor.
What a guy.
Come on.
Renaissance man.
What a guy I am. Obviously, you're really good at acting. That's how you put food on the table. If the genie came out of the lamp, right, an artisan crust,
yeah,
a Gale's crust, maybe. If the genie came out of the lamp, acting, musicianship, or art, sketching—that is, sort of art. Which would you choose? Gold, silver, bronze? Or are you just grateful for what you are, so let's leave them in that order?
I'm grateful for having been able to have a go at all of these things. Right. I don't claim to be particularly good at any of them. It's just...
If your music had to have a world title fight, your musicianship against your artistry, which would win?
It's all me. No, it is. You know, I just think, I went to art school, and the ethos when I went there was you can kind of do anything.
Right.
Not that you're going to be trapped into this little cubbyhole. I don't claim to do any of these things particularly well. It's just I like doing them, and I have some little flair for some of them. And I've discovered that if you keep at things, if you keep showing up, you get a bit better.
A bit better. Mm. That's cool, isn't it? Compound interest is massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
The compound interest.
Yeah.
People overestimate what they can do in a day, but they underestimate what they can achieve in 10 years.
Yeah, keep coming back. Keep showing up.
Well, I'll be here if you'll be here. You know where we live, yeah? Can't get rid of us.
No. Keep it at it.
Thank you, Peter. That's great.
Lovely to see
nice
you.
Nice to see you.
Lovely to be
off
here.
To bed now?
Off to bed now, yes.
He's definitely going to bed straight away. All right, it's on the telly, Criminal Record. This is the Saffron, the Platinum. Forget the Golden Age of Telly. Criminal Record, episode 1 and 2, out now. New episodes released every Wednesday. Cheers, man.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on,
let it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Bassus, over to you.
He's one of very few people who can say they made back-to-back films with Stanley Kubrick and the Spice Girls. He's been lighting up our stages and screens for over 30 years and next week lands in London with his new show, Alan Cumming Is Not Acting His Age. So please welcome the ever forthcoming, always becoming and currently incoming, Alan Cumming!
All right, Alan!
Hello.
How are you?
I'm coming.
You look very well, man.
Do I?
You You do, honestly.
Thanks.
Now, we know nothing of your stand-up show or your theatre show, your one-man show, your solo show, but we know everything about your TV show. You're not really on to talk about your TV show. Ironically, we've seen your TV show. You haven't.
I know. I can't believe
you
I've not seen it.
You have seen your theatre show. We haven't.
Well, there we are. We've got something in common.
It's one all. Let's go for the decider, Alan. What's going on? Tell us more about everything.
Oh, well, you know, my show, the Alan Cumming's Not Acting His Age, is on next Monday and Tuesday at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane.
Right.
And it's sort of like an old-fashioned cabaret. I have a band, I sing songs, I tell stories. And it's all under the sort of umbrella theme of getting older and the pros and cons of that and just sort of something we all share. We're all getting older. And I talk about how I feel about that.
Like, yeah.
I talk about, you know, getting older, where the positive, like, you know, you have wisdom, you have things you can pass down, but then people die, of course, you've got to deal with that, and sex, getting older and stuff like that, and then also about, you know, things like going to the dermatologist. I'm nearly 59, so my next big birthday is 60. I'm getting on there, but I still feel like I can do everything I used to be able to do.
Yeah.
And but when I go to the dermatologist, I feel that's because there's just things that gravity stuff happens.
We have a filter. We don't have a filter on the show, but we have a filter at home, right? And actually a filter for water.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And something stopped working the other day, and then we didn't know what was wrong with it. So we had no idea what was wrong with it. It's like, what is wrong with this? There's nothing to go wrong here. And so then we got this very clever man out, actually two very clever men from Brass Monkey, and they came and visited us and said it'll be the filter. And we said, well, what could possibly be in the filter? Chris, it's your skin. It's your dead skin.
Oh.
Because the older you get, the more of it falls off.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And they said, they looked at the amount of skin in there. You can't, it doesn't look like skin, but that's what it is.
Skin in your water filter.
Yeah. And they said, judging from this, don't say it this the wrong way, but you need to put a standing order in for a new filter every 28 days.
Because that's got the zombie association as well.
What I love about the way you described this show straight off the bat is, you know, it's about getting older. It's not about getting old. People really annoy me when they say that.
Me
I'm old. It's like,
oh, I'm too old.
But there's always somebody older and you're annoying
and
them.
And also, we're all doing it. Yes. This is a thing that's happened. One of the things I talk about is, why is it that we have made something that is inexorable in our lives that we're all doing? Why have we made it into the worst possible thing that can happen to us?
It's
a huge negative. Is it an excuse?
No, I think that's why people do it, as an excuse to...
Oh, say it. Yes, to not have to deal
with
it.
To not have to try or, you know, deal with things or be responsible for things.
Right, because also you can. That's also the other thing is what is age appropriateness? You know what I mean? Acting your age to me seems you're allowing other people, society, the Daily Mail, I don't know, to dictate to you what the rules are for getting older, what you should wear, how you should act, you know, all that stuff. I think it's really fascinating. And I've realised that not acting your age, and this is the sort of the message of the show, is that you're actually not, you're ignoring all those voices and you're sort of staying true to yourself and being open to the possibility of things and being curious. Just be curious.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've hit the bullseye with this show. Our demographic is our age. I'm 57, nearly 58, you're 58, nearly 59, and we're both approaching 60, and that's I think that's hilarious. I can't believe it without laughing. I can't believe it because I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
No, zero.
You know, I'm now feeling younger by the year because I'm looking after myself more.
Right.
You know, and you and I, we've been around
the block.
We didn't leave anything on the pitch, did we, thus far?
No.
There's nothing on the pitch thus far that's ours.
Yes.
Yeah, other people may have left stuff there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, not us.
I feel like because I'm thinking about this a lot because I've been doing all these interviews, it's not that I feel I am 33, but I feel like my life hasn't really changed since I was 32. Like, I feel I sort of have the same outlook and I do the same things mostly.
Yeah, I have more clarity than even then.
Right, yes, so more clarity,
I have the energy that I had then, now back, because I'm looking after myself a lot more. But I have more clarity than I had then because I was drunk most of the time, if I'm being really honest. Right. And also, I was full of, you know, the biochemistry of the verve of that particular part of my life.
Yeah. But I think there's a thing about when you feel, you know, when you sort of feel, actually someone the other day, one of these interview people said, what would you say to someone's about to turn 30? And I said, gosh, well, you know, grasshopper, you know, all that. I said... What you need to realise is that this is it. If there's anything wrong in your life now, you've got to fix it. Because, you know, in your 20s, it's like, oh, blah, 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 you know, things will change. But there's that thing when you've got to take responsibility and make changes. And if you want to be happier, you've got to do something about it. It's not a rehearsal. This is it. And that's what I find from that age.
I agree. And Vass and I were talking about it earlier on, weren't we? To make your life 1% better, you know, they say if you can be 1% better today than you were yesterday and 1% better tomorrow, well, it's just not that easy. But 1% of 1% better is more realistic. It's probably 1% of 1% of 1% better every day.
Yeah.
It's so difficult, but the 1% is like gold.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yes, little
my
changes.
God, if this is how 1% better feels, what's like 10%? I might not be able to cope with 10%. And it looks like if I carry on doing this, I might get to 50, 60, 70%. And just talking about it, it just makes me feel excited, ambitious, inspired, energetic, happy. I want to be better.
Yeah. And also the realization that you can do it. It's you.
Yeah.
It does it. So that's what I think is, I think as you get older, you realise it's not like this thing with not acting your age. It's not the external forces in your life. It has to come from you.
Yeah, it's the opposite of the grumpy old man syndrome. It's the absolute polar opposite of that.
Yeah, because that's the blaming everybody else.
Yeah, and also more excuses not to be any good anymore.
Yeah.
And we should be better.
Absolutely. Or at least just good and being sort of trying.
Yes, absolutely trying. 100% trying.
Yeah.
Here's the bit that nobody tells you, I think.
What?
As you get older, you think, okay, I'm going to be more experienced. Maybe I'll even get some wisdom. Who knows? And you think, it's all going to be all right. It's really not, because the longer you've been here, or the longer you're here, it's like Seinfeld, you know, he says he only spends an hour on stage because the longer he's there, the more chance the audience have of winning. And eventually, if he stays there long enough, they will win.
Right.
And life is like that.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
So as you get older, to our age now, it doesn't get any easier. You just get more used to it. You get better at it.
Yeah, you get better. You sort of get better at managing it.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of like trauma as well. If you've had trauma in your life, like I wrote this book and I wrote another one kind of to sort of counter the reaction to the first one, because everyone was like, oh, you've had all this trauma, Alan. Oh, but it's all better now. That was what the American sort of tying up with a neat bow was. And I sort of said, actually, it is better, but it's not gone away. You just manage trauma. You know, everyone has trauma and you just get better at dealing with it. And then you just move on with your life and it's never completely gone.
You surrender to it.
Yeah.
You relax and you release. Mm-hmm. You know, you let it sit and you let it go. But you have to let it sit in order to let it go.
Yes, and it has made you who you are, so you have to acknowledge it's a part of you.
Oh, without question. Without question. You know, I mean, you know, you make wrong decisions. I've made loads of wrong decisions yesterday, day before, year before, decade before that, tomorrow, the next decade. And if you don't make mistakes, you're not trying hard enough.
Right.
But all the mistakes, all the what was wrong in the past gets you to exactly where you are now.
And if you're happy in that place, then you have to not regret anything.
Yeah, well, we have twins, Walt and Boo, who are 5 years old, you know, and any mistake that I made before them would have meant on the day that they were Tash conceived, a different sperms would have gone to different places. We may not have had twins at all.
Yeah.
So all my mistakes led to the birth of our beautiful twins.
Yeah,
and that is a fact.
Yeah.
That is an absolute one, not 99.9%, 100%.
Absolutely. And I'm totally with you on that. Everything comes to the place that it should be. And if it doesn't, then you've got to, you've done something in the past to alter that, or you've got to change it in the future.
Yeah. I bet the show's amazing. I'm glad it's not a moaning show, not a whinging show.
No, it's a very positive show. And it's funny. I mean, I talk about people who've died. Even when I talk about death, I talk about the messages and the sort of spirit that people have left behind that you can sort of take in and keep them in the world. And then about how, and I talk about, there's one thing I talk about three people who've sort of made and left a message with me. One was my dog, one was Sean Connery, and one was Mrs. Brady from the Brady Bunch.
What a great combo.
Yes. And I tell this story about how when I met her, well, I didn't meet her, but I did this thing with her a few years ago before she died, obviously. And we got drunk because she'd smuggled vodka, because they didn't have hard liquor at this party. And the party was Carol Channing's 95th birthday celebration.
Wow. And she smuggled, let's just let that settle for a while.
and she smuggled a bottle of vodka into the party because she was worried they might not have vodka at the party. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And then so we were, anyway, at the end of the night, I sort of like gave her a kiss and I touched her tummy, and we were going to see each other soon. And I sort of touched her. I was like, oh, wow, Florence, you've got abs of steel. And she went, yes, punch me. I was like, what? And as she goes, punch me in the stomach, find how firm my abs are. I was like, I don't feel comfortable punching you, Florence. And she goes, punch me. And now people are starting to look around. Like Mrs. Brady is asking Alan Cumming to punch her in the stomach. It was just, and so I did give her a little bop, and it was like touching concrete.
Was it absolutely? Did really she give nuts. You any tips on?
Well, then I said, God, look at that, amazing, Florence. She went, yeah, that's what vodka does for you.
Yeah,
she's like a, she's such a, and then I told this. Well, she died soon afterwards. Nothing to do with the punch in the stomach, but I told this story.
We hope.
I know, because
it's like Houdini.
I told this story at her. Memorial service. Her family, you know, she told them the story too, and so then they asked me to. So I went to someone's funeral and told the story about punching them in the stomach.
That's funny, man. And so there's songs as well.
Yeah, I sing. I've got a band.
Original songs.
One original song I wrote about plastic surgery.
Oh, tell us about that.
Well, it's sort of a love song, but it's about asking someone to stop.
Right.
Doing, and it's called "I Want to See You."
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, there's lines like. Wrinkles, I mean, you're running this great human race. Don't let a stranger take a knife to your face. And just like, it's all just about, can we stop and just be. And the thing in the show I talk about is that we worship at the altar of youth as a culture, but we've got to change that and realise that, you know, it's beautiful getting older too, that, you know, we have got to see beauty and not just youth. And I think that we're all just told we've got to do all these things to our face and do, you know, do, wear these clothes and do all this. It's exhausting. And all it means is we're not appreciating anything older. Like, my role model for how I want to look is Samuel Beckett.
Yeah.
Just full of wrinkles and gorgeous.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you got love. You have a smiling face. You have a smiley face.
Yeah, like, what's that? I remember in Coronation Street years ago, someone said, these aren't wrinkles, they're
laughter lines.
And someone said, nothing's that funny.
Yeah, I think it was David Bowie to Mick Jagger.
Oh, was it? Oh, it wasn't Coronation Street.
Yeah, I think Coronation Street nicked it. I think actually that's what happened.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it can't have been the other way around, I don't think. but it's funny, isn't it? Because we were talking yesterday off the air, and I meant to slip the conversation on the air, but, you know, so, we didn't have time, to be honest. We were talking about when people lie about their age.
Yes.
And, you know, usually they say they're younger than they are. Now, if you think about that's such an idiotic thought. There's no logic to that whatsoever. Because if you say that you're younger than you are with words, right? Well, a face speaks 1,000 words.
Yes.
A picture speaks 1,000 words. If you lie about your age, say you're older, then you look younger.
That's right, but nobody does that.
Nobody does that. No. That's the clever play.
Because everyone, wow, you look great. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm 104. You look about 70. But no, 50, it's
you know, the thing is, I used to say, when people would say, you know, how old are you? I go, 75.
Yeah.
And they go, what? And I go, no. And then now, of course, they go, oh, really? Oh, they don't really. It's not such a stretch. It's like years ago when people would say, what play do you want to do? What's the next big role you want to do? And I thought, oh, what a boring question. And I have no idea. And so I'd always say, oh, King Lear, because I thought it's so far away that I won't have to talk about it very well. But now it's not that. I could play King Lear right now, actually, I suppose. And I don't want to, by the way. But I just think that's really funny how the goalposts shift as you get older, you know, those sorts of things.
And it's the same with plastic surgery, because I used to live in LA. I know you spend a lot of time there. When you first land there, I remember seeing Nancy Reagan sneak out of the... Not sneak, but I mean, because she had to sneak everywhere because the Secret Service was there. So this is, you know, way after her husband... He was no longer alive, but way after her husband was president, but she was still, you know, the first lady, because you're always Mr. President and first lady or whatever. And so it was on Sunset Boulevard, just behind the Coffee Bean, and she'd been to see... There was a plastic surgeon there. She was coming out of the door of the plastic surgery.
Right. So let's see.
I presume she wasn't the receptionist.
Fair chance. You know. Yeah.
I lived there for the first few weeks. I thought, God, lots of people do have plastic surgery. Like the pool man had plastic surgery. You can tell because of the nips and the scars behind the ears and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But talk about boiling the frog. After living there for about a year, or being there for about a year, didn't live there for a year, I thought it became much more normal to me. And you do normalise it. And that's the whole thing about, if you do want to change your behaviour, they always say that the biggest external thing you can do to change your behaviour is change your environment, because it has such an effect on you.
Totally. And now it's not just like Hollywood that has it. I mean, everybody does it. They have, like, you know, you see it in the high street, Botox. And people have Botox parties where you go and have drinks and get shot up. The other day, I was doing an interview and I have to say this thing that I'm going to be the last person ever on American television not to have had Botox. Like, everyone has it, and even the crew on films. And then I said that, and this young journalist sort of looked at me and went, gosh, Alan, you know, I hope you take this the right way, but you look like you have had Botox. And I was like, thank you, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
No, it is interesting. There was a newspaper photograph printed of me at a party from a few years ago, not a long, long time ago, about 5 or 6 years ago. And they were suggesting in the words, they didn't say it, but they suggested that I had Botox. I am the least Botox, but I do have a very smooth forehead.
Yeah.
I've always saunered. You know, I try and look after myself a lot more now. I've always been hydrated. But it's so funny that that was the whole point of the piece. It's like, okay, whatever, yeah, it's fine. I don't mind. That was
slow
funny.
Used it, yeah.
And again, I was flattered. Yes. I thought, don't need it. May have had it. Don't need it.
Do you know there's a funny thing about Sophia Loren that she? I always think when I think of her because there's two things. She said this thing that whenever you sit down or get out of a seat, you must never do that. You go, you must never do that. You must keep it inside because that shows your age, right? Yeah. And the other thing was that she said for years that she'd never had plastic surgery, and then she had a heart attack in our plastic surgeon's waiting room.
No, she all right? Did she?
Oh, this was a long time ago. She's still with us, but it was but I just thought you can't get away with that. Do you know what I mean? You think, I'd had a heart attack. Well, I just happened to be dropping by.
Yeah, it's like Zach Goldsmith, who ran for mayor, didn't he? And one of his big things was the 20 mile per hour speed limit, which he wanted to introduce.
Yeah.
And last year, he got done for speeding 4 times in 1 year, twice in 20 mile an hour.
Oh, brutal.
You see him at pickup at nursery.
Yeah, speeding by. Alan, it's great. I love the sound of the show, man. I love the sound
of
the show.
It's really fun. I really like it. Yeah, and it's, you laugh, you cry.
I also love you.
Oh, bless you.
I don't know you
Thank
very
you very
well,
much.
You're really interesting. You have something else going on. You speak from well below the neck. So from where, people listen to where things come from within them. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So if you're saying it from your very being, they hear it way deeper than their
absolutely.
Ears.
You connect with people more when you're authentic.
You feel it, can't you?
Yes,
feel it here?
Absolutely.
No? Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
So you have had lots of success. I'm sure you're very grateful for all the success you've had. You've been very fortunate.
Yes.
You're very good at your job as well. And you've put in the heavy lifting and the hard yards and the long hours. In America, they really took to you in America, didn't they?
Yes.
And they still do. They love you in America. What do you think is the key? And not a sort of a strategic key, because I know you're not like that. But what is it about Brits, be they Scottish, Irish or English or Welsh, making it in America? What is it that the American audience take to in some Brits that they don't in others?
I think it's just that thing we were just talking about, the authenticity. That, they are very Anglophile-y. They love...
They do.
They love the English sort of thing, especially. But they love sort of, the old country, basically. And it's an interesting thing. They're such a new country that they always say, I'm an Irish-American, I'm an Italian-American. They always prefix the country of where their sort of origins are from.
Yes.
So there's that. But also, I think... And they're a sucker for an accent. But I think it's also something that if you are different to them... Then actually, if you are someone who's comfortable with your difference and embrace your difference and don't try to sort of become them, because I think a lot of people go to America and they kind of try and become in that sort of, they change, they kind of smooth off the edges of who they are and try to do that sort of generic American sort of movie star thing.
Yeah, mid-Atlantic.
The mid-Atlantic thing, which is, so repulsive. It's just, I can't. And when people start, the first thing people start to do is go, they start talking and blah, blah, blah. And the A sound starts to become and.
Yeah.
Like you're saying end of the line.
Or they double D the double T's.
What does that mean?
So from letter they go letter.
Oh, I hate that.
Or better.
Oh, I hate that. Or start saying the producer.
Yeah.
And the ooh sounds of the U. Anyway, so that gives me the dry book, as we say in
it's
Scotland.
It's so funny you say all this, because when I was watching your TV show, which I know you're not really on to talk about, but I do want to talk about this brilliant programme you have on telly, Alan Cumming's Paradise Homes, starting on Monday the 12th of Feb. We got to see it yesterday. It's on HGTV, 8 p.m, and available to stream on Discovery+. It's really, really good. One of the things really, really good. It's really, really good. We loved it, didn't we, Max?
Absolutely.
We were talking about it before.
Fantastic.
Thanks,
it's fantastic. It's really... It's so good. It is a... It's like the love child of Grand Designs, MTV Cribs, Architectural Digest, and there's one other which I've forgotten now, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, suffice to say, we loved it.
It's a good combo.
One of the things that really surprised me was your accent. Because I'd just forgotten what you sound like.
Right, because, yes, it's interesting doing more hosty things.
Yeah.
Because people get to, you know, I mean, when you're on talk shows and things, people sort of forget because you're there promoting something. And usually, mostly, always, the thing I'm promoting is not doesn't sound like this.
Yes.
So they kind of, even though you're talking like this, promoting it, they sort of forget. And so it's actually interesting. I'm doing more things now, like that show and the I do the American Traitors. And so people are sort of, even I've lived in America for like 25 years and people on the street go, I just realise you're Scottish. You're like, well, yeah. Where have you been? But it is so interesting.
You do agree. I mean, you do. You must have walked the whole length of the counter of American accents.
Yeah, I've done a few crazy ones.
Give us. Where have you been? No, you don't have to give us the accent. By the way, I'd love you to. But whereabouts geographically? Where have you been in roles?
Well, you know, the sort of general. Like when I was in The Good Wife for years, that was sort of. It was set in Chicago. But I just did my sort of generic American accent, and everyone's saying, "Oh, you do a great Chicago accent." I said, "Do I?" And then I did. I've done a lot of southerny things, and sort of more, you know, New York-y. But the craziest one I did is I did a film years ago in Minnesota, in rural Minnesota, and I played a 1920s Minnesotan farmer with, you know, Alex Kingston, lovely Alex Kingston.
I don't, to be honest.
Oh, like, she was my wife, and we had like 10 children. And I had to do this Minnesotan accent. It was insane.
So what's it like? How's it differ?
It was, well, oh, you know, sort of talk like this. Oh, I've got a...
Canadian then.
Yes, and I just did a film in Canada this year.
What about you now?
Last year. What?
What about you now?
Yes, what about...
Hey?
What are you talking about? You know, it's all like that, yeah. That weird O sound. And it was in rural kind of New Brunswick it was from. So it's kind of just north of Minnesota, actually. So that was hilarious. And it was me and this other, this English actor called Charlie Creed-Miles. We were brothers in it. And the pair of us were like accents up the wazoo. It was hilarious. Really hilarious.
You've got to get it right.
You've got to. And we had little tapes. You know,
and coaches, and accent coaches.
And an accent coach. And
oh, wow.
So, I mean, the good thing about when you do a film, that when you start filming, usually it doesn't change. The script's not going to change. So you can really practice and get the signs for that thing. So it wasn't. But, you know, you just, you're chatting away, then you kind of, and then they say, when you go to do the looping, months later, they go, this scene, we kind of feel you've dropped the accent a bit. And you go, really? And then you hear it, you think, oh my God, I sound like I'm on a bus in Glasgow. It was terrible.
So funny. So Matthew McConaughey, when he was on the show last year or year before, I can't remember, talking about Greenlights, his book, which is awesome.
Yes.
You read that book?
No, but I've heard very good things about it. Yeah,
book. And he was saying that for accents, not all you have to do, he said, but one of the key things to do for him with accents is imagine where you are. And I said, what does that mean? He said, well, what it means is that, you know, if you're in Texas, it's hot. And it's sweaty, so you're probably going to be relaxed and you're going to be dry-throated.
Oh, my God, that's a good idea.
I like that.
Yeah,
as
I never
thing.
Thought about it, that sort of environmental accent.
Yeah,
approach.
Of course, because it must have some effect on you, mustn't it?
Yeah. I mean, lots of accents are that way for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Of all those things. That's really interesting.
How did it happen? I wonder how it happened.
Well, the Minnesota one happened because it's so many Scandinavian people went to live there.
Right.
And that's, so it's a really, that's the Scandinavian influence that makes them sound so nuts.
Yeah.
And actually that film I did, it was called Sweetland, and it's about they used to have mail order brides come over from Scandinavia to marry all the farmers, and that's what this film was about.
No way.
Yeah, and because this bride came, but actually it was just after the First World War, and so she'd been German and she'd kind of escaped and gone to Scandinavia, so when she came over she was actually German. Of course they were all freaking out about the Germans after the First World War.
So has this film been out?
Yeah, years ago. It's called Sweetland. It's a beautiful film.
Oh my goodness.
Directed by my friend Ali Salim.
Have you seen Saltburn? We just ask everybody this question.
I have, yes.
Have you seen it once or twice or three times?
Just the once.
We're going to watch it again this weekend.
Everybody
is still talking about Saltburn.
It's a lot to take in.
Is it a 10?
No, it's not a 10 for me.
What do you think it is?
It was a healthy 7.5.
7.5. You're not really allowed a 7, just so you know.
Oh, you're not?
Not on this show.
Oh, well, I'll give it an 8.
Okay.
But I didn't... you know what? I thought it was incredibly entertaining.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I came away from it it's sort of aristocracy porn.
Right.
In the way that I think Downton Abbey and that sort of stuff is sort of aristocracy porn, and I feel uneasy about it. And the one thing I really didn't like about it was that the overall message is that, oh, these poor old rich people being taken to the cleaners by a working class horrible person.
Right.
That didn't sit well with me. That
no, it's
sort of
funny
message.
That you read, well, he wasn't working class, he was middle class, wasn't he, in the end?
Well, yes, that's true.
Yeah.
But someone who wasn't of their tribe.
Yeah.
And I just think I'm kind of done with things about aristocrats being sort of you know, pooped on.
I think I liked it a lot. I think I like...
I really thought it was great and entertaining. Yeah, I loved it, though. Don't get
I thought
wrong,
it was quite punk as well in its own way. Whereas absolutely. It's because he didn't care.
No, and I
it was
loved...
fearless, actually, because he did care, but it was just fearless.
Yeah, and it's dared to do crazy things, like him slurping up the bathwater and shagging...
And other things that we can't really talk about on Breakfast Radio.
Yes, you noticed I just said the bathwater, yeah.
Jane, relax, take a breath, it's going to be fine. She only got her UK citizenship this week, so she's quite worried. You're not on parole, you're in, Jane, you're in. It's all right, it's going to be fine. So listen, so you have your theatre show, we're talking about Alan Cumming, which is his favourite subject, I would imagine, or my favourite subject about him. Alan Cumming is not acting his age, it's a theatre show. We're not finishing the chat. I'm just mentioning it again now in case you've just tuned in. Alan Cumming is not acting his age. It's third show. It continues Monday, 15th of Jan, London's Theatre Royal, Drury Lane.
And the 16th.
Monday yeah, and the 16th. And there's a couple of other dates as well.
Then I do Manchester on Thursday and Glasgow Armadillo on Saturday.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. These are no small things. I know you've done it. You've written it. It's amazing. You sing. You tell stories. It's brilliant. It's very positive. It's lovely. And it's exactly what the world needs. It's one of the things that the world needs. I'm not going to say it at the moment because people say that all the time. Oh, it's what the world needs now at the moment. No, the world needs this stuff all the time and always has done. But you're busy, man. And so this is no small undertaking. And, you know, I can't imagine the phone has stopped ringing or will stop ringing anytime soon to Alan Cumming's agent. Why would you do such a thing like this? Because it is a big deal, isn't it?
Yes. And like I not many people I know do stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know. I've always sort of made a lot of my own work.
Yes.
You know, and I think even from when I was at drama school, my friend Forbes Masson and I did a double act called Victor and Barry. And
what's his name again?
Forbes Masson.
Forbes Masson.
It's a great Scottish name. He's a great actor and a brilliant writer. And we did this sitcom in the 90s called The High Life about flight attendants. And that was kind of a version of this double act we'd done before a skit at drama school. And then it became this big, huge thing. And so that's an example that I've always kind of made a lot of, written and done a lot of work. And the sort of way of performance of like being a live performance where you're connecting with an audience, but you're talking about yourself, you're not a character.
Yes.
It's something that I've kind of got more comfortable with as I've got older, because you sort of dare to be, I sing in my own voice as well. I sing with my Scottish accent. And I've kind of just over the last 10, 15 years got much better at being comfortable with my authentic self.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I really enjoy about that. And it's great to have a connection in that way and to, you know, have a theatre fix without having to do 8 shows a week.
Yeah, I get it.
And it's a nice, and I can do it in little spurts here and there. And it's also fun. Musicians are great. And I love working with a band. And I sort of, you know, I wanted to be a dancer. And I sort of, last year I did a dance piece at age 57. Oh, the year before last, I suppose. And I've always kind of wanted, secretly felt like I wanted to be a musician. And I'm not really, but I get to sing with a band and, you know, do things like, can we take it from bar 18? All that stuff.
And if there's a band behind you, you're sitting on the shoulders of magic, aren't you?
Oh, they're just, I love musicians. The way that they can just kind of, you know, we as actors take weeks to be able to just say some words. Yep. They, in an hour, can be at literally concert pitch. It's so impressive.
So how busy are you otherwise?
It's really nuts. I've just got back the other day from India. I took a trip on my own to India and just had this really incredible experience. I realise that's what I do. I get away, have a really, I love travelling, and I love travelling on my own actually, because so much of my life is always just,
smells better.
Everyone's around you and you know, and so then I come back and it's hardcore, you know, morning till night, and I do this tour, and then I go back to America on the 22nd, immediately go and do something else, and then now, of course, because the actor strike's finished and sort of productions are starting up again, so there's all, it's a bit nuts right now, I've got better as well about saying, I'm taking this time off, I'm taking this month off, I'm going to do that.
I mean, you're clearly very happy, I can tell that.
Yes.
And you're very content and you still have a mission and a purpose on a daily basis. And it's brilliant. So well done. Congratulations.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you.
Has your career, even though you are extremely happy, has it gone how you thought it would?
not at all. I mean, I guess like when I was a wee actor, when I was at drama school and things like that, I like the idea of America. Like I live in America. I'm, you know, and it says, I see on the things, it goes, Hollywood star, Alan Cumming. I think, what? But it's kind of true. And I...
No, it is true. I know. Take the kind of out.
Yes, yes.
It's true,
and,
Alan.
And I, that to me is, so I never, America, the idea, I never went, I never even visited America until I was 30.
Yeah.
And I never, I thought when I was, you know, out of drama school, I thought, oh, maybe one day I'll move to London and be an actor in London. That was like what I thought might happen. And then all of a sudden, and I did do that, but all of a sudden it just happened and I'm in...
How did it just happen? Remind me.
Of America.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was I started to do films in here and then I did this film in Ireland, actually, called Circle of Friends, yeah. With Minnie Driver and Chris O'Donnell and Colin Firth and... people, and then that was really popular in America, and that was the first time I'd ever been in a film in America, and so I went to do press for that, and then I started to get offered, and then I did some other, like I did the James Bond film, but I did a lot of films all in a lump, and so I kind of was an onslaught of me in America, and so then I started to get offered, so I went, I mean, I'm kind of annoying, because the first thing I did in America was to play the lead in a Hollywood film in Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion, and then I went, and then Cabaret that I'd done in London at the Donmar, then it transferred to Broadway. So the first job I had in New York was starring in a Broadway musical. So that was that whole sort of double whammy is what happened.
And you're a bit naughty as well. So you're interesting
because
you only have to be a bit naughty to be really interesting. And
right.
If you're very naughty, you can be very interesting, but you can be too naughty for your own good.
Right. Yes. That's
so
true.
There's a bit of a game to be played there.
I used to say I was the acceptable face of deviance in America,
yes.
Because I could, you know,
get away with it. Look at that yes. smile.
And also, like, you know, years ago,
yeah.
I used to, you know, there was very few, like in the early 2000s, there were very few kind of out sort of famous people in America. And I would go on, you know, The Tonight Show and ha ha ha, talk about things, but also talk about, you know, gay rights and marriage equality and things like that. So I had that access to people.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't scary.
Yeah.
I could say things that I wanted to say, but I wouldn't scare people. I wasn't like a scary sort of, you know.
And you had something
weirdo.
To say and you bothered to say it.
Yeah, it was important to me to say it. I mean, I've always, I people sort of think, I think when you're famous and you sort of have a platform, but you have a cause,
yeah.
that in some way this is something you've just done because you're famous. And sort of like one of the accoutrements of, you know, you have a stylist.
Well, sometimes it is, of course.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
But for me, I've always felt like, you know, I always say this thing, when I was at drama school, I was collecting for the miners. Remember the miners were on strike
and
Thatcher was blocked, of course. And I was on Byers Road and outside the tube station collecting things, and a lady spat on me. And I was a drama student, just, you know, volunteering at the weekend. And that to me was a really big sort of moment in terms of, like, that was my activism, I suppose, was gelled there, because I thought, what the hell?
What's
I'm just trying
about?
To help people who are not...
Yeah. Why are you so annoyed at me trying to do something that I think is probably nice?
Yes.
A nice thing to do? The anger there?
What's your problem? Yes, I know. And that's the thing I actually find really... With anything that I have a sort of beef about, I actually think, why are you so angry about this? Why don't you... What is the, and it's mostly, like, what is the problem you have with other people having... rights or
it's
just
all projection, isn't it?
Yeah, or just having comfort and just being happy. What is the problem with that? How does that, you know, the cake thing, me getting rights, me getting, it doesn't mean that you get any less cake.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%, Al. 100%.
People are stupid.
the TV show that we're not really talking about, which is out in February, which is fantastic. It's Alan Cumming's Paradise Homes. Just quickly, we've talk way over,
title.
But I love talking to you. I love making. I'm making the most of you. I've got something else to tell you in a minute before we go off the air, which is all good, by the way.
All good.
I think it's good anyway. I don't know. But this show. Where did this show come from? Alan Cumming's Paradise Homes.
They just asked me, and it was so funny. I sort of initially it was supposed to be about islands. Right, and people who built homes on islands, and then they realized they couldn't get enough islands, and so I was like, oh, really? And so but it's all people who have built their dream homes,
yes.
right? And I go and meet them. And of course, it's so lovely because they want to show off their homes. I wouldn't let people into my film crew into my house, but they love it. And I talk to the architects, I have a real interest in architecture, and
you can tell the way you talk about it.
And then I sort of, you know, but then I go and sort of look through their cupboards and things like that, and that was the fun part to me. I just basically go to people's homes.
You're an intellectual nosy Parker.
That's what you are. Really, I really am. And I just love kind of, I mean, I love just being just chatting. I'm, you know, I love chatting, and I love kind of being a bit cheeky with people and seeing how they deal with it. And it's great when you do a show like that, when, you know, you have, there's always a camera on you, so just a little look or a little eyebrow. Yeah,
great. You're really good at it.
Oh, thanks so much. No, I'm really, really glad you liked it.
Well, there's this new thing about Super TV, because I think we live in an age of, there was the golden age of TV. This is the platinum age. This is the saffron age of TV. It's amazing. You know, and what they've done, the Netflixes and the Apple TV Pluses and the Paramount Pluses and the HGTV Pluses of the world, is they've asked amazing actors to play the role of being a super TV presenter. So so you're not a TV presenter, you're an actor playing a TV presenter really well. And it's like, good luck everybody out there who thought this is, you know, how you do it is how you do it. No, how you, Alan Cummings does it is how you do it.
Do you know that's... It's interesting because The Traitors, the thing that is out, you know, the Claudia does it, and I do the American version. I host it, but I actually play a character. I feel like I'm acting. I play a character in it.
Yeah.
And so it's even more heightened than the Paradise Homes one. I'm like, I've sort of, welcome to my castle. It's not my castle. I don't live in a castle.
See, just you doing that. It's like, yes, give him the job. Lock the doors. Don't let him leave the building. Yeah, put his agent in a box because he can basically name his price on this one. Oh my gosh.
But I love that show. It's so hilarious and compulsive, and I'm actually going to watch the Claudia version because I've just got, you know, as I just go back.
Have you seen the billboards for it?
No. Oh yes, the big hoods.
That's great,
yes,
isn't she?
I know. Yeah, it's so camp. What I think is hilarious is it's such a camp show. Like people going around in cloaks and things, and you know, you're banished and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And what is hilarious though is that the American version, I think, it's the only time an American version of a show is camper and more theatrical than the British version.
Love it.
I think that's me.
Yeah, I think you may have something to do with that.
Because of my capes.
I got to tell you, I mean, I know that Claudia, she's such a family woman, and she seems to work a lot, but believe me, I know she really protects her family time. You know, you'll see her on telly, but she will be as efficient and as professional, but as efficient with her time and as economical with her time and her energy as she possibly can be whilst delivering 100% of what she needs to, because she loves her family so much. If she didn't, she'd be on American television. America would love Claudia Winkleman.
Totally.
She is the real deal. She's so clever. She's so funny. She's so British.
And really, yes, absolutely. And also really authentic and sort of compassionate. You can tell there's such a kindness.
She's the funniest woman I've ever met.
Yeah, she's
and to be that funny, you have to be very, very clever. She's also the cleverest woman I've ever met, I think. One of the
cleverest. And also
people.
Really self-knowing. And I love how she talks about herself and all that stuff.
She takes everything seriously but herself.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is exactly, well, you don't take things that you should take seriously, but never take yourself seriously, because also you're at your worst when you're taking yourself, because you become sclerotic, you become full of stasis.
That's such a good word. I love, you know, it's two good words.
There's no flow. You lose all your flow, don't you?
Yes.
When you become
you block
or whatever,
you block your flow.
Before you go,
Alan, what's the thing?
It's not a big thing. It's like this is, I always think whenever I see you, we watched James Bond over the Christmas and you were in, obviously brilliant, by the way.
Thank you.
But I always think the same thing when I hear your name, see you on anything. I always think this, and it'll mean nothing to you.
Oh.
We're going nowhere with this, by the way. There's nothing to see or hear here. I went to a theatrical production of something, and I can't remember where, and I can't remember when, and I can't remember who, and I can't remember what. Good story,
eh? Story, yeah.
How bad is this story?
You might want to try this out of town.
But the only reason I was going is because you was starring in it, right? Uh-oh. In the West End. And as I arrived at the theatre, there was a temporary note stuck on the door, at the front door of the theatre. And it said, due to the indisposition of Mr. Cummings, role of blah, blah, blah will be played by blah, blah, blah. And I've heard of this thing, so-and-so is indisposed.
Yes.
And in the theatre, well, that can mean many things,
exactly,
can't it?
Exactly, yes.
And I just think, oh, it's that notice. I thought this was like something that were... I didn't realise they did put these notices up, and they did use the word indisposed.
Alan Cumming was indisposed.
Well, thinking,
that should be my next
and
show.
And I've always wanted to know.
I wonder what that was. I wonder when that was. A long time ago.
I'm not fishing. I'm just thinking, I hope it was what I think it was.
There's a strong chance. But you know, of course, I'm a professional.
I wonder what show it was. I can't remember.
I must
try. You're the star of it. I still went to it and I still think it was brilliant. I thought, God, it's good with whoever it was that filled in for you, but how good would it be with Alan? Anyway, that's my story.
That's hilarious.
It's funny.
I really like that Alan Cumming is indisposed.
Yeah.
It'd be a good
book. Maybe the next theatre show, Alan, unfortunately, Alan Cumming is not indisposed. Yeah, and he'll be on every night this week. Or something like that. Coming of Age, you must have thought of that.
That one, yes. Coming to America. Yeah, coming to America. Coming all over, yes.
You are the best, Al.
Thank you so much. This is lovely to talk to you.
It's great to see you, man. Alan Cumming is not acting his age. Continues next Monday, the 15th of Jan. Also Tuesday.
Tuesday at the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, and Monday, and then Manchester, and then Glasgow.
All right, tickets available via aegpresents.co.uk. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
How exciting is this?
With Waitrose.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Up and at 'em, come on, things to do. Don't cheer, you'll just embarrass yourselves. We're not bored of it yet, so it's lovely. There's no stopping them. No stopping them.
The Graham Norton Radio Show.
Oh, there's nothing nicer, is there? Nothing nicer.
With Waitrose. Food to feel good about.
I mean, what's not to like?
Saturday and Sunday from 9:30.
Over on Virgin Radio.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.